Hi, my name is Marshall, and I was an investigator for the Coast Guard for over 30 years. Before I begin, I'm not going to give any last names or overly personal information for the protection of myself and those involved. As I write this, using the first names my superior still feels like sacrilege. However, following the events of this story, I had signed an NDA pertaining to what was uncovered during the investigation. Given that I'm now staring down the barrel of a nasty cancer diagnosis, I no longer care for my career or life. But I don't want to hurt anyone else in the process. Despite the danger of disobeying a federal NDA, I feel that people deserve to know the truth about what lurks in their coastal waters. During my time as an investigator for the Coast Guard, my days were spent stopping drug runners, hanging around the docks, and yelling at drunk party boat captains. However, every single serviceman or member of law enforcement has a couple of cases which they cannot forget, no matter how desperate they are to do so. The SS Napoli was one of those cases. It was 1997, and I had been an investigator for the Coast Guard for 3 years and was stationed in Portland when my partner John and I got the call. According to our dispatch, there was a small cruise vessel which had veered into a restricted commercial waterway. Having nothing better to do and not wanting to look too lazy around our superiors, we made our way to our small patrol boat, where we were met by one of the senior investigators named Eric. "John, Marshall, you're both late," Eric said as he stood in front of our boat with his arms crossed. "I didn't know this was going to be so serious," John said as we walked towards the boat. "It's always serious," Eric said as he stared daggers at John. "This search has become a high priority, and we're just wasting time standing here, so move your asses." After glaring at John for another second, Eric turned around and quickly made his way aboard the boat. "Screw me," John said as he gave me a look of dejection and annoyance. "I was really hoping this would be a quick call." I looked at John and gave him a shrug as I boarded this ship. During my time being stationed in Maine, I had heard from several of my colleagues that Eric had a reputation for being a by-the-books hard ass. "It was his way, or you were just in the way," my friend Pete would tell me. I should have known that once Eric had become involved in the investigation, that this was going to be more than a routine stop. However, even with the knowledge of how Eric conducts his investigations, we were all unprepared for the turn that this case would take. It took us about 20 minutes to get to the site of the SS Napoli. When we got there, we found that she had drifted into a sandbar and had gotten stuck. Despite this, we could hear the loud sputtering of the engine, desperately clinging on for dear life as its rotors were being enveloped by sand. "Hello, this is the US Coast Guard," Eric stated over our boat's PA. "Turn off your engines and come out on top of your deck." We waited for a minute before Eric repeated the message. "This is the US Coast Guard. Turn off your engine and come out, or we will board your ship," Eric boomed over the loudspeaker, clearly annoyed at the lack of response. "Screw this," Eric said as he drew his pistol. "We're boarding now." Eric had John put down our anchor, and the three of us boarded the ship. As soon as we stepped aboard, I noticed several piles of clothes neatly folded along the deck's edges. "Maybe they went for a swim," John said sarcastically, as he simultaneously avoided looking at Eric. "Enough clowning around. Let's go turn off the engine," Eric said as his words trailed off. John and I both looked in the direction where Eric was staring and saw a limp hand holding a pistol on the ground. "John, get to our boat and call this in. we have one confirmed casualty. Without saying a word, John quickly leapt from the Napoli onto our ship and made his way to the radio. With his gun drawn, Eric motioned for me to follow him, and we quickly breached the helm of the ship. When we got inside, we found the heavily decomposed body of a man in his mid-50s with an exit wound on top of his head. As Eric radioed John to relay the man's information, I stared mindlessly at the back wall of the helm, which had become adorned with the man's dried blood and brain matter. "Marshal," Eric yelled, snapping me out of my daze. "Sorry, sir," I said as I regained my composure and started searching the pockets of the man's pants for any identification. "It's okay," Eric said in a surprisingly understanding tone. "Let's figure out who this man is and how he got here." Reaching into his left front pocket, I found his wallet and pulled out his ID, which caused a loose photo to fall in the process. "Looks like his name was Wendell Kramer," I said as I handed Eric the man's ID. As I went to put the man's wallet on the table, I saw the small photograph and picked it up. In the picture was Wendell, and what appeared to be his wife and two older children as they stood in front of the Bellagio in Las Vegas. "Looks like he had a family too," I said as I handed Eric the photograph. "Wife and two kids," Eric said as he looked out the open doorway. "How many piles of clothing were there?" "3, sir," John said as he made his way into the helm, stopping just short of the corpse. "Christ, do you think it could have been a murder-suicide situation?" John said as he looked down at the man's body. "I think that I need to see the living quarters of the ship first before I have any theories," Eric said as he walked past John. "John, you're coming with me. Marshal, I want you to see if we missed anything in the helm." "Yes, sir," I said as Eric and John made their way to the deck below. As soon as Eric and John were out of sight, I quickly ran out of the hall and threw up over the side of the ship. During the first 3 years as an investigator, I'd only been part of one other case involving a death, and it had happened earlier the same day. Never before had I ever seen the effects of advanced decomposition on a dead body, nor had I ever smelled the blending of the seawater and advanced rot before. After composing myself, I made my way back into the helm and started searching for any evidence. As I looked back at the wall behind the dead body, I noticed that there had been a small circular glare of light at head level. Turning around, I saw a VHS camera propped up onto a shelf. "Sir, I think I found a camera," I said over the radio as I picked it up and pressed the eject button. "There's a tape inside of it too." "Thank you for the update, Marshal," Eric said. "Come down below and bring the camera with you." Without any hesitation, I put the tape back in the camera and made my way down the stairs to the living quarters. John and Eric were sitting down at a table in a small kitchen. "Did you find anything down here?" I said as I sat next to John and put the camera on the table. "Nothing to give any probable cause, but we did find 4 suitcases belonging to 2 women and 2 men," Eric said as he put 2 new AA batteries into the camera. "We also found batteries," John said as Eric quickly smiled before going back to his cold gaze. "Are we going to watch the tape?" I asked as Eric turned the camera on, causing it to sound its startup jingle. "Of course, it's evidence, and we have nothing else to go off of," Eric said as he checked the time on the recording. "Looks like there's about an hour's worth of footage on here." John and I sat in anticipation as Eric put the camera back on the table and hit play on the VHS recorder. The first clip started off with a woman wearing a black and white striped bikini sunbathing on the deck of the ship, while two people could be heard having a splash fight in the water. "Hi everyone," a man said as he zoomed in on the sunbathing woman. "Here is my beautiful and not at all cranky Clara." "Oh Wendell, stop that," the woman said playfully as she sat up. "And this is my not at all annoying husband." "Ooh, burn," the man said, laughing. "Dad, I'm hungry," yelled a boy in his mid-teens as he climbed the ladder to the deck. "And can we please not have pork chops again?" a younger girl chimed in. The man then turned the camera to face himself, revealing himself to be the same man that we found in the helm. "Being a parent is such a rewarding experience," Wendell said sarcastically as he was sprayed with water. "Hey, cut that out." The video then cut to black before starting clip 2. "Hey assholes," the boy from before said as soon as the second clip began. "Today, I'm going to be pranking my dad by pushing him overboard." "Like hell you are, Connor," Wendell said as he grabbed the camera. "You couldn't trick me if you tried."
"Yeah, Connor, you'd have to be smart to do that," the young girl said as she walked by the camera to sit at the kitchen table.
"Screw you, Sam," Connor said in an annoyed tone.
"Hey, be nice to your sister," Wendell said sternly.
"Ugh, fine," Connor said as he sat down.
"Dinner's ready, Clara," Wendell called out before giving an annoyed look to the camera. The camera then went black again. As I watched these clips, I couldn't help but think about the man whose lifeless body is lying directly over our head. "It doesn't get any easier," Eric said.
"What?" I said as I snapped back to reality.
"This isn't the first time I've had to go through footage like this," Eric said as he gave me a sad look. "Seeing someone's ghost, their memories, the life they've left behind. Just try not to get too caught up in it. Remember, we need to be here for them so they can rest knowing someone was able to tell their story."
"Thanks, sir," I said as I looked down at my hands. Eric nodded and clicked play on the camera, which started up clip 3. In this clip, it was now nighttime, and the family were staring at something off in the distance.
"Wendell, do you have the camera ready?" Clara said in nervous excitement. "You have to film this."
"I just turned it on. I'm right behind you," Wendell said as he approached his wife and kids. As he got behind them, the camera showed 4 blue orbs of light hovering over the ocean.
"What are those things, Dad?" Connor asked as he turned to face the camera.
I don't have any idea, buddy," Wendell said as he zoomed in on one of the orbs. When he did, you could see that the orb was pulsating as if to mimic the water below.
"Wendell, I don't like this," Clara said nervously.
"Yeah, let's all go downstairs and play some board games," Wendell said with clearly fake enthusiasm. As Wendell started to put the camera down, he quickly froze. Suddenly, a faint sound could be heard off in the distance.
"Is that singing?" John said as he leaned towards the camera speaker.
"Come on, kids, let's get downstairs," Wendell said in a more concerned tone than before. The camera once again cut to black, leaving us in pure disbelief.
"You all heard that right?" John said as he quickly looked at Eric, then me.
Yeah, I think I heard something," I said before being cut off by Eric.
"I didn't hear anything," Eric said as he pressed play on the camera. "Let's just keep watching."
"Dad, get the camera quick. You need to see this,"
Sam yelled from the top deck.
Wendell then ran up the stairs to see that the bright lights were much closer now.
"What the hell?"
Wendell muttered under his breath. As he stared at the pulsating orbs, the singing from the third clip
had become much more audible. John then paused the recording and turned to face Eric.
"See, don't you hear the singing?" John exclaimed. "The orbs are harmonizing."
Eric said nothing and pressed play on the camera. The clip continued with Wendell filming the orbs. Suddenly, the song that was being sung began to shift.
"Wendell, Clara, Connor, Sam," the orb sang.
As they sang, it sounded as if they were producing multiple octaves of sound at once, producing a rolling sound of harmonies at a perfect pitch. As we listened to the track through the VHS, I felt the hairs on my arm begin to stand up. "Sam, honey, let's go to bed. It's late," Wendell said as he started to walk towards his daughter. Sam, having either not heard her father or did not care to listen to him, stayed perfectly still as she continued to stare into the orbs floating 10 feet above her head.
"Sam!"
Wendell yelled, snapping Sam out of a daze.
"Dad?"
Sam muttered groggily. "It's okay, baby," Wendell said, clearly shaken by what had just transpired. "Let's get you to bed. You are sleepwalking again." The clip went to black, and John pressed the play button with no hesitation. Eric and I looked at each other as the clip began.
"Clara, Connor, Sam,"
Wendell called out as he left his bed and entered the living quarters. All around him, the sound from earlier had gotten loud to the point of causing the VHS's microphone to start clipping. The blue light given off by the orbs had surrounded the boat, causing rays of blue light to cast throughout the cabin. As Wendell panned the camera around the room, he heard the faint sounds of talking above deck.
"Hold on, I'm coming,"
Wendell yelled as he ran up the stairs. As soon as he reached the top deck and turned to face the bow of the ship, he instantly froze. Clara, Connor, and Sam were standing completely nude and facing the ocean.
"What the hell is going on?" Wendell yelled.
As he made his way towards his family, he stopped and screamed as four creatures began to rise in front of his family. As the skinless humanoids began to tower over the three, they began to unhinge their jaws and produce two black tentacles which emitted the same light blue glow as the orbs. The three of us and Wendell watched in horror as three of the creatures pressed their tentacles over Clara, Connor, and Sam's faces. As the tentacles latched onto their faces, they appeared to suck away at their skin.
"Stay away from my family, you freaks," Wendell cried out.
As soon as he spoke, the fourth creature began to shuffle towards him, walking as though their legs did not match their autonomy. Wendell began to slowly back away as the creature made a break towards him. The sudden speed of the creature caused me to flinch as Eric sat stoically and John sat transfixed. Wendell quickly rushed to the helm and slammed the door shut just as the creature was about to grab him.
Damn it, what are those things?"
Wendell muttered as he tried to catch his breath while he locked the door. After a minute of composing himself, Wendell pointed the camera towards the window and walked off to the left side of the screen. From the hatch, we watched as the formerly skinless creatures started to take on facial features from the family members, becoming twisted versions of the loving family we had seen on TV. The placement of hair on the creatures' heads were matted and off-center. Their mouths, which were still unhinged, looked crooked and broken, and the creatures bulged from the skin they adorned like a tight-fitting suit. As soon as Wendell came back on screen and looked out the window, he vomited at the abomination before recoiling due to a loud banging sound from the other side of the door. Wendell looked up in horror as the face of the skinless creatures suddenly appeared from the other side of the hatch window. It smiled at Wendell as it began to bang its head furiously against the door.
"Take this," Wendell screamed as he drew a pistol and fired 3 shots through the door.
As the shots rang out, a deafening scream of pain could be heard from the other side of the door.
"Ha, got you,"
Wendell cheered as he looked out the window. As soon as he saw the scene outside, his pride had quickly soured to dismay as he began to sob.
"I don't know how to live without you," Wendell said as he stared down the pistol. "I'm so sorry, everyone. I love you so, so much. For anyone who finds this, my coordinates is 43.6 to minus 69.7. If you see blue orbs over the water, run."
As soon as he said this, Wendell picked up the camera and placed it on the shelf beside the door. Out of sight of the camera, the sound of the engine roaring to life can be heard, as a single gunshot exploded through the mic, leaving just the sound of the singing from behind the door. Suddenly, after several minutes, the sound of banging resumed, and a loud crash was heard off camera. After several moments of shuffling, the creature that was behind the door appeared and stared directly at the camera, causing John to let out a blood-curdling scream.
"What the hell?"
John screamed as he shot out of his chair. The sudden reaction caused Eric and I to flinch as John began pacing around the cabin.
"John, are you okay?"
Eric asked as he got up.
"Its face," John screamed. "Its damn face!"
"I know. I don't think I'll ever be able to unsee that skinless freak," I said.
"What the hell are you talking about?"
John said as he stopped pacing and stared at me.
"The creature," I said in a confused tone. "It didn't have skin and was all muscle and tendon." "It had my face, Marshall. You didn't see my face?"
John pleaded.
"It smiled at me with my own damn face."
Eric shot a glance at John before giving me a worried look.
"Grab the camera. We need to leave now," Eric said.
"But it had my face, sir," John muttered between fits of crying.
"Now, let's go,"
Eric yelled. Eric stormed out of the cabin as I helped an inconsolable John up the stairs and onto our boat. The ride back from the SS Napoli was tense and silence between John's constant whimpering. As soon as we made it back to dock, 2 members of the Coast Guard were waiting to escort John to our field office. As I was about to get off the ship, Eric put his arm out to stop me.
"Sir," I said before being cut off, "what I'm about to tell you is extremely important, so I need you to listen,"
Eric said as he looked around to make sure no one else was in earshot.
"Of course, sir. What is it?" I asked.
"You didn't see anything today," Eric whispered.
"Of course, sir. I won't tell anyone," I replied.
Eric just shook his head and stared at me.
"Even if you saw something, you never saw anything. You never heard anything. You know nothing,"
Eric continued.
"I'm only telling you this because I have no choice. But those creatures you saw are sirens."
"Like from the Odyssey?" I asked.
"Similar," Eric said as he became slightly more relaxed. "They prey on those who allow themselves to be open to their calls. As soon as you leave here, listen to your favorite album or do something to rid yourself of the mark."
"What about John?" I asked as I watched him struggle to walk with his escorts.
"Watch over him. Make sure he doesn't do anything stupid and hope that God's grace is in his favor,"
Eric said as he pulled out a cigar and lit it.
"Now go. You're dismissed."
"Yes, sir," I said as I gave a salute and walked back to the office. For the next couple of hours, I took Eric's advice and listened to some music, and watched a late-night Celtics game on TV with my friend Pete and some other colleagues. Just as Bruce Bowen missed another two-point shot, Eric burst into the office.
"Where is Marshall?" he yelled.
"I'm right here, sir," I said warily, as the guys who were watching the game with me tried to distance themselves.
"Follow me, now,"
he yelled as he slammed the door. I stood in the room, confused for a second, before grabbing my coat and rushing for the door.
"Poor guy," Pete said as I rushed out of the room.
As soon as I left the office, a marshal was waiting for me, holding an M16.
"We have a serious issue, Marshall," Eric said as he handed me the keys to the boat.
"What's wrong?" I asked nervously as I eyed the assault rifle.
"John stole one of our boats, and I think I know where it's going," Eric said as he began to briskly walk to the boat.
"Where is he going?" I asked as I tried to catch up.
"The coordinates in that video. He's going back to the site where the incident happened," Eric said as he picked up his pace.
"Why would he do that? He was terrified of those things," I asked as we neared the boat.
Just as we were about to board the boat, Eric turned to look at me. "Because he never listens, Marshall." He embraced the song, and now they have a hold on him.
Eric and I then boarded the ship and sped off into the night towards where Wendell had reported the incident. By the time we arrived near the location, it had been about an hour since we had left the dock. Ahead of us, we saw the footlights of a ship in the distance, and to my horror, a bright blue orb hovering in the sky.
"Damn, it might already be too late," Eric said as he turned the safety off the M16.
"What's the plan, sir?" I asked as the floodlights came closer.
"We save John if we can, and I shoot anything that's not human," Eric said as he pulled earplugs from his pocket and handed them to me. As we approached the side of the boat, I saw John standing on the bow, nude and staring at the sky while the orb above him was singing, just as it had in the video.
"John, John, John."
"John, what the hell are you doing?" Eric yelled.
John didn't respond.
"John, if you don't answer me, I'm going to board this boat and haul you off myself," Eric yelled as he prepared to disembark.
Just as Eric was about to board John's boat, a creature started to crawl from the water onto his boat. Standing before John was one of the 8 feet tall, skinless sirens.
"Oh, damn," Eric said as he raised his rifle.
Before he could shoot the creature, John turned around and fired 2 shots from his revolver at Eric, hitting him in the shoulder. As Eric lay bleeding on the floor of our boat, John turned back towards the creature as its tentacles exploded from its face and latched onto John's skin. As the creature began to harvest John's skin, John started to moan with delight. Not wanting to see John consumed, I grabbed a medical kit from the helm of our boat and rushed over to Eric to stabilize his wounds.
"Don't worry about me, son," Eric said between gritted teeth. "You need to take that thing out."
I nodded and carefully grabbed the M16 from beside Eric. Once I had it in my hands, I quickly spun around and fired several shots at the creature. The creature turned around to look at me, and I saw that half of its face now resembled my partner, John, while the other half still was primarily muscle. It snarled at me, showing off its various rows of different sized teeth. When I was able to see this creature up close, I realized that it looked like it was made of human beings stacked upon each other. Its legs had different joints and knees that did not function. Its hands had tens of fingers that didn't move. Its face had several jaws and mouths of various sizes moving in unison. It was as if it was a Russian nesting doll of flesh and bone. After a moment of staring me down, the creature lunged for me. I quickly sprayed the rest of the magazine into the creature. As I did, thousands of teeth and bone exploded from its face and torso, and the creature fell forward into the sea. Staring back at John, I saw him gasping on the floor of his boat, drenched in blood, and missing several layers of muscle and flesh from his face. As he turned to look at me, he smiled before the creature, which I thought I had killed, grabbed him by the legs and dragged him below the surface of the water. Having no bullets left, I watched in horror as the man I'd worked with for the last 3 years was dragged down to a watery hell. After a moment of standing, defeated and utterly dumbfounded, I made my way over to Eric and handed him the rifle. "You did good, son," he said as he lit another cigar. "But John's dead," I replied, barely able to hold back tears. "You did what you could," Eric said between puffs. "Now, let's get the hell out of here." I wish I could say that I became Rambo and hunted down the creature that killed my friend. But I didn't. I knew that John was a dead man as soon as he set sail for those damned creatures. But every day, I think about all the ways I could have stopped him. Eric and I would go on to work together on many unexplainable cases after this one. But those are all stories for another day. For now, as a former Coast Guard investigator, if you see blue orbs in the sky on the open ocean, run like hell. And don't ever listen to their song.